welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And I just want to do a quick follow-up. I mean, I asked a lot of people, and on the show Friday, I asked everybody to try to find some time this weekend, hopefully for the Sabbath, but find some time. I mean, some people can't do that on Sunday, but because of, you know, working or what have you. However you find your time to worship and commune with your Savior, the challenge or the, I guess, the opportunity that I was seeking for everyone was to take some time to fast, to pray, to gorge upon the Scriptures, and to, more importantly, gorge upon the divine hand of providences. I mean, I think the gorging on the Scriptures, if you really take the time and you gorge on the Scriptures and pray upon them, and especially, I mean, most people just pick up the book. Go to, you know, if your Bible has a topical guide, or look at topical guides for the Bible and look at where you can read on very specific things. You know, you can't go wrong in some parts of, you know, the book of Isaiah or Ezekiel. When we actually look at very specific context, then it helps us really understand what we're dealing with right now. I mean, reading the, you know, the discourses or the epistles of the, you know, the apostles, excuse me, you know, those things are paramount. They're absolutely important, but especially when it comes to your salvation, but in understanding how evil is going to operate and those types of things, I believe that everybody can start to obtain insights to the reality of our situation. This becomes the, it helps prop everybody's eyes up when, you know, I say it's now or never, it's a chorus of amen. It is now or never. Now is the time for good men to take a stand. There are plenty of adages and or, you know, the only thing, you know, like Edmund Burke, states, sayings, or what have you. What do you call those? Well, there's another word for it, but I don't want to ponder too heavily on trying to come up with the right words. The bottom line is, Edmund Burke basically says, the only thing necessary for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. And so we really have to start thinking about that. And most people just think, well, all I've got to do is do something. Well, hold on here. I will go further and say, either you are a part of the solution, you're engaged in the solution, or you're a part of the problem. And it doesn't matter how good you feel about what you're doing. If it is not going to end and remove the tyranny and the heel of tyranny from our necks, then you're a part of the problem. Now, one of the things that really has, you know, kind of come full circle for me has been a few things that I've said in the past that I want to reiterate. One of the things that is just blatantly jumping out at me is the hate and vengeance that is coming from the diametrically opposed ideologies in America and the world today. And this is the byproduct of Satan's dividing and conquering. And he's winning as long as he has us in the throes of hate, seeking vengeance. Because while we're seeking vengeance, he is continuing on in his evil work. There are a lot of organizations that people can get into, and you've heard me right here. I, you know, this may be a bully pulpit, but it doesn't mean to be. I am working with people that are members of the John Birch Society. You hear me, you know, ping and poke them in the eye. I'm working with members of the John Birch Society or people that, you know, support it in some way, like get their magazine. They, you know, they pay their $50 a year, what have you. But that doesn't mean that they agree with the John Birch Society. Many of them are just shaking their heads going, what in the heck's going on? And it is a great opportunity for all of us to actually put aside our differences and our interests, our organizational interest, our personal interest, and work together to eliminate tyranny and basically reclaim the republic. But these groups aren't doing that. So this is the sign, folks, of controlled opposition. If the organization you're working with, whether it be the party, whether it be the John Birch Society, whether it be Tactical Civics, these three objects that I know of, and they're good, you know, there's good patriots involved in them, and I think the people involved in them are good, but their hands are tied. Their hands are tied because they have a charter, they have the bylaws, they have guidelines that constrain them from actually being able to contribute to the solution. In other words, the funding and the establishment of these organizations, whether it's the NRA, whether it's the John Birch Society, so on and so forth, the Republican Party, and as far as I'm concerned, any of the parties, because at this point I do not see any of the parties moving towards and placing themselves on the top of the mountain. Now, I see state parties, but I do not see the party systems. They are antithetical to being able to be a part of the solution. They want people to believe that just contributing will be good for them. But the reality is it will not bring forth and remove, you know, bring forth liberty and remove the heel of tyranny from our necks. So I can't emphasize enough how important it is that we all start doing a due diligence. And actually, I'm going to actually start creating a page of those organizations that we've actually reached out to and have some form of communication from these organizations. And I think I'm going to drop those communications on the website, you know, from Tactical Civics, the John Birch Society, and any other groups out there, to basically state, look, you know, and until these organizations actually step in and start helping with petitions and holding government accountable and teaching we the people that we possess all the power that to demand compliance with our Constitution and can restore those vestiges of government that have been taken from us, such as our common law courts and common law grand juries, our militias, and so forth, that unless we're going down this path of using petitions, First Amendment petitions, and actually getting people and preparing people to replace them and pushing forward and demanding that the state stand up against this federal government that is raining tyranny upon us. See, it doesn't have the authority to do these things, but it will continue to do these things until the states unite, and they must unite. It requires the parties, a majority of the parties, to demand compliance. And if you look and understand Republic Review, that's exactly what that is. You know, I wish I would have had, you know, a crystal ball, or I wish I would have had, you know, that profound visitation to where I could have actually had, you know, this whole concept from Republic Review to how to create constitutional counties just exposed to me. It's taken me a while, and I think that that's really my fault because I've been the dense forest in not letting some of the light through. But I've gotten the light through, and there's no doubt in my mind, there's not a person out there that can refute what we're talking about, what we're doing, what we're supporting. And so what they do is they basically try, and this is the progressive tactic. They will attack the individual, or they will attack the organization. If they can't, then what they do is they obfuscate. They'll come up with, oh, well, you know, as a matter of fact, one of the greatest retorts that a progressive uses is, where have you succeeded? You know, bottom line, James Madison and Thomas Jefferson never succeeded in holding the government accountable. They succeeded in actually conducting a political coup. Now, to be clear, these petitions are absolutely legal arguments that can hold people accountable and can actually enforce the law. That's what these petitions will do. However, more importantly, these petitions are designed for the people to exercise their political power in holding public servants accountable, because even though we may not get the outcome out of the petitions, we can get rid of those who refuse to do so. And eventually, by replacing enough of the politicians, those petitions will garner fruit. See, the target isn't necessarily the court to prove anything. The target is our public servants, which is why we deliver these to them, because when you hand the petitions over to your county commissioners, you put a stink on them that they can't wash off. As long as those petitions exist, and as long as they have failed to do the demands of those petitions, which are constitutionally sound, they will, regardless of where they go, as long as people point out that smell that they smell is stink, that these people have no desire to fulfill their oath of office and to support the Constitution, and are willing to constantly tear apart and destroy our liberties and our Constitution, which means, folks, that they are the enemies. They are the enemies within. Now, I think I need to get back in touch with Trevor Lawton. I need to call him, because it's been a while since we've talked, and he's a very good friend, and I know that he has a lot of information regarding the Communist Party and its infiltration into our government. As a matter of fact, folks, if you're not familiar with this man, he's a subject matter expert on communism and its infiltration in America, as well as communism and its infiltration into the Christian church and into the religions of America. And so I need to reach out to him to see, one, how he's doing. And actually, I would like to, go down the point of creating, when I have the luxury of getting to that level, we have so many other high priority petitions. This is where we need you. When I tell you that we need your help, the one thing that we actually must get, because I can't do them all, and I'm doing too much, the one thing that we actually need help with is people in writing petitions, so that we can have a large swath of petitions that we can cover our public servants, who will know there's just no way they're going to stand and rise to the occasion of fulfilling their legal obligation of supporting the Constitution. They will, and this is how we get rid of them. There's a gentleman that is running for a Senate seat in Oklahoma, and I'm hoping that I think his name is Derek. We touched, or we communicated. I reached out and kind of tapped him on the shoulder in Facebook. So actually, I'm going to look it up right now, because I can do that. And so his name is Dusty Devers. Derek Evans is the guy I also reached out to. He's in West Virginia, but he's running for Congress or the Senate. He's running for federal office, and I've reached out to talk to him as well. But the bottom line is, see, the federal office, like Dusty Evans, or Derek Evans, I'm sorry, and I'm bad with names. Here I'm looking at it, and I confuse the two, Dusty Devers and Derek Evans. But I believe that Dusty Devers has a great opportunity with the petitions that we have, and if his organization actually gets behind this and he becomes the champion and actually starts going in and handing these things, because, folks, this would be a weekly event. You actually go in and commandeer your county commissioners, and you petition them, and you film this, and you watch them do nothing. Or actually, if you get them to actually get behind you, what this proves is how Dusty Devers in Oklahoma, in Lawton, Oklahoma, can take a stand and use the Constitution as a campaign, as the most, I'll just use the words, righteous or constitutional person in the race to serve the people to fill this empty seat. See, their election is coming up. Their primary is in October, and their election is coming up in December. And there's no doubt in my mind, if you become the leader of the people, if you lead, they will follow. I tell you this all the time. If you go out and show that you're taking a stand on the Constitution and that you will not allow violations of the Constitution continue anymore at the federal, state, or county level, and you're starting at the county level because they all share the same oath, that they all must support the Constitution. And therefore, as a representative government, your county commissioners have a legal obligation to represent your interest to the state. Even though the county commissioners have been basically and unconstitutionally removed from this representation, even though that has happened, it doesn't remove their responsibility and capability of actually petitioning the state. It's very easy for them to take a petition, create an endorsement letter, and basically say, we wholeheartedly support this, and we demand that you follow these things that the state must do that is identified in this. And if they want to add to, you know, even further, you know, I'll just say expectations, harder expectations, or amplify them, they have the privilege of doing that to prove how they are on board with demanding full support of the Constitution. And that goes the same with the state legislature, that they can start petitioning their state. So when you read these things, go read the Department of Transportation's petition. I believe it's petition 6 on the Reclaiming the Republic website. Go read the last, I don't know how many pages, probably 8-10 pages. Those are all the expectations. We demand that they actually create a bill that will and pass as law that demands a committee be formed that will audit the Constitution and the federal government and identify all the violations, and therefore start, you know, delineating specifically on paper, black and white, how the federal government is violating the Constitution. So, folks, when you look at what we're talking about and what we're doing, this is the action. This is the constitutional action that our government will fear. They're going to laugh and mock, but I am telling you that they are shaking in their boots because they do not want to let on that they will be actually overcome, that they will be removed. They want to convince people that you can't do it. They want to convince people that that thing in the First Amendment, this right of petition, doesn't apply to them, when it clearly states that the right of the people to petition government for the redress of grievances points out that any government that doesn't specify the federal, and as a matter of fact, the 14th Amendment applies those privileges and immunities to all citizens of the United States, that we can petition all of our government. It is an inherent right. This is an inalienable right, which is why it is in the Bill of Rights. So I just want to place context for you, folks. Why are these organizations like the John Birch Society, and I'm going to keep on ringing on Tactical Civics too, because and the Sovereign Citizens. Why are the Sovereign Citizens actually getting people to remove their citizenship so that they, this is the ultimate. Sovereign Citizen Movement and the General Assembly Movement is the ultimate controlled opposition. How? Because, folks, they're convincing you that you shouldn't have, you know, you shouldn't be a U.S. citizen, and they're convincing you and taking away these rights that are guaranteed to U.S. citizens. Because you're a U.S. citizen does not make you a constitutional subject of the government. The 14th Amendment does not do that. What it did do was it actually made all Indians and all slaves or blacks who were born in this country under the jurisdiction, where their parents were under the jurisdiction of the United States, those who were born, that were born in a marriage or a family, that family was under the jurisdiction of the United States, they became citizens. In other words, those illegals that come here that are, you know, not under the jurisdiction of the United States, the invaders, their children are not U.S. citizens. So therefore, because they're not U.S. citizens, they do not and are not under the jurisdiction. They're under the same jurisdictions as their folks. And when they start creating children, their children are not U.S. citizens either. You must be either born under the jurisdiction or naturalized. Read the Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. You have to either be born under the jurisdiction or naturalized to be a citizen. And none of these folks think that they have to be naturalized. Kamala Harris was never naturalized. Nikki Haley, and the Swami, the gentleman that's running for president, who's, you know, some big tech billionaire, what have you, that's running for president, he's never naturalized. So we've got three. We got one already in office, folks. My appeal to you is to hopefully with the gorging of the scriptures and of the Constitution, the ratification debates, and the founding documents, and fasting and praying, my conviction is that you should actually have the conviction and the commitment of a giant, of a warrior for Israel, a warrior for truth, that we will actually vanquish and conquer. Now, folks, we need to start setting expectations. It is expected for us to do right and do good things. We have to continually promote this until our death. Because at all times, we're never to compromise and accept the situation that Satan has created for us. So bottom line, folks, we're obligated to take a stand. Now, one of the things that I wanted to get into, and actually, let me ask you this, and I think I might have posed this question, but I want to pose it again. Why is it that we're told that we cannot have a president and a vice president from the same state? Why? Why is that? Because it's not in the Constitution that there shall be no vice president. Go look in Article 2 for the qualifications. There's nowhere in there for the qualifications of the president and vice president that they cannot actually be from the same state. And this is in where we all actually have this awakening to where we can go, wow, okay, so clearly I understand, you know, that we actually can have, because I've actually said this, because the reason I've said this is the Electoral College is forbidden to be able to cast votes for both a president and vice president that they be of the same state, that they, you know, they can't be from your state. In other words, an Electoral College person, a person in the Electoral College can cast a vote. You don't have to be, if you live in a different state, if you don't live in Florida, a person of the Electoral College can cast both the president and presidential vote for citizens of Florida, which means that DeSantis could actually become the vice president, and Trump could become the president. It's just that the Electoral College of Florida is constrained. They can't actually vote for both president and, you know, for Trump and DeSantis as a ticket. So this actually goes to prove how the Electoral College, quote unquote, ticket of the vice president and president is a fallacy. That, you know, the fact that they can't create this ticket, when in reality, 49 states in the union could actually form a what we would call an alignment of two Floridians as president and vice president. And it could actually happen without Florida being involved. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so one of the things that I still need to get into, and I actually haven't covered this in a little while, but it's worth stating because usually on Friday, I don't think I got into this last Friday, so might as well cover it now. Now, the Fed now has actually been stood up, and it's been operating for a few weeks now, going on a few weeks, and when we told you about this, I basically felt that there would be a run, but I thought that the run would be more significant. And this actually kind of leads to one thing that should be alarming and concerning. Now, gold was, at the announcement of FedNow, on the week before, I should say, the announcement of FedNow, gold was at 1814. Now it is 19, or basically it's about 1950. And it's fluctuating, but it's gone up. It's gone up about 100, let's just say $150. And the magnitude of that, that's, you know, not that much at all. I mean, that's what, 7% maybe? And silver, that was $20, has gone up now. And so in other words, it's actually come down and it's on the trend of kind of going down. It's at $23.74. So I think at the high, at one point, it was like $26, maybe $27, but you know, and that's a significant, you know, you could see that as being a significant increase just because silver is more volatile than gold because not as many people have the money to go and buy or play with gold. So this is my takeaway. The surge, or whatever surge I anticipated was going to happen in the buying of precious metals, currently is fading, and it was lacklustered at best. And this is the reason why, folks. I mean, in other words, well, actually, let me tell you the reason why, and then in other words. I believe that the reason why there is just a lackluster in buying precious metals is it has less to do with understanding our current economic situation of what a digital currency will do, and it has more to do with apathy with the majority of Americans, investors or what have you. I think investors do not see, you know, it's just a new currency. Okay, we're going to go down that. And many investors, because of cryptocurrency, it has created the door, this portal for this digital currency. So in other words, there's more and more people that are accepting this direction. Now, I point this out to people that the whole world is going to be deceived. Do you think we're being deceived right now when people do not understand? And the day it happens, they're just basically, as a Genesis song says, they're going to go in with the devil, hand in hand, gland in gland, completely oblivious to whom they are walking with and basically aligning, or I'll even go as far as to say baptizing themselves they're becoming a part and representing him. Just like baptism would be a form of representing Christ, taking upon him, taking upon yourself his name. Well, Satan wants everybody to take, for us to take upon his name. And it's the same thing. And that's what's happening. And the song, I'd highly recommend. It is very, it's a progressive rock song. It's called Supper's Ready. And if you have never heard that, there's a video to it. Go read the words to it. As a matter of fact, there's this point in time where it says 666 is no longer alone. He's getting out the marrow of your backbone. I mean, I could make a show out of just reading the verses from that. And that's, I think that song was done in 1970, 1969. And so it's prophetic maybe, but the reality is it's based on the Bible. I mean, the Bible tells us that, you know, we will be so conditioned and so indoctrinated that, you know, heaven be damned based on the attitudes of America, or I should say the attitudes of the world. The world will welcome this new Antichrist because he's offering the song even addresses this. I would just recommend people listen to that because to me it's just a mind-blowing song. So, and they deal with, I think it's a 9/8 beat at one point that really throws people off. But anyway, getting back to what I'm trying to say. The lack of the run and the lack of the increase in sustainment of precious metal, folks. In other words, you're really getting over. In other words, because it's still affordable, you still have this opportunity. In other words, do not take this opportunity, this blessing of still having affordable precious metals to be able to at least put some aside along with food. I don't think you need to have a Fort Knox, you know, stockpile, but you need to have, you know, silver rounds, silver liberties, and some, you know, small bits of gold. I would not, you know, you don't have to go buy the 1/10 ounces of gold. Don't buy the 1 ounce because the 1/10 ounce, that's a lot of money still. That's about $500, $400 or $500. But anyway, so this begs the question, how many real patriots are out there right now if there wasn't that much of a run on precious metals? I mean, it barely made a blip. Well, 7% in gold right now currently. I think it got up to maybe 10%. I think it was a little over 10% increase on gold over this course of time. And when I look at silver going up to 7%, well, what was that? 15%? Let's just say a 15% increase. That's nothing. If the majority of Americans recognized what was going on, there would have been an instant short. There would have been a shortage of silver, these minted rounds, these minted Liberty dollars, and so forth, these small commodities. It would have become really impossible to buy. So consider this, you know, that little bit of blessing. You know, so I know there's people out there that go, I really need to have a lot. And yeah, I guess you do. But here's the question I have, and let me pose it this way. Regardless of how much money you hold in the bank, and regardless of how much gold you hold, if you really recognize that this is the groundwork for the end. In other words, how is it you're going to be able to pay for your mortgage? How are you going to pay a bank a digital currency for your mortgage? So in other words, there's probably going to be a lot of people that will actually be defaulting on their bank mortgages unless you've set something up. Unless you've actually set something up to where you have the ability to actually, you know, purchase food, you have the ability to purchase, or you actually just set it up where you have a large fund, but either way, it has to go into that system because the banks and all transactions would be done by that system. So how is it, unless you actually own your house outright, and then again, you've got this thing called property tax. How are you going to pay your property tax? How are you going to pay all these things? In other words, many of us will have to default. Many of those who refuse to go into the system will have to default. So then what? So then, you know, we're actually sitting on a dime, because when you look at these financial catastrophes that we actually see people sitting, you know, in homes that they haven't even paid a mortgage for. I've known people that have sat in homes over the past defaulting in the past decade, where they've sat in their home for 4 years without paying a mortgage. They stopped taking care of their home. They just basically kept it livable so that when the time came, when the bank came to take your house, they're going to force you out of the house, that, you know, they were ready to run. So just understand where we are regarding, you know, the majority of America, because I don't know how many people in America really own their homes. I think it's far less than 5%. Just due to the fact that people have been living in this fallacy that their home is an ATM, and as the value goes up, they can just mortgage and leverage more and more. So the question becomes, you know, what is it you're going to do? And how many patriots really are out there? And I think that there's a lot out there, but my question is, how many patriots will actually be able to sustain this forcing of, you know, the digital mark and all of that? Let's talk about this, and let's talk about the reality, because this is what I talked about on Friday. Where is the resistance to the surveillance state? How many people out there, other than yours truly, how many people out there are actually creating arguments against government, against the surveillance state, such as the digital currency? Hey, we created a petition regarding that. We've actually helped people, you know, protect them. We do have the opportunity to keep America from going down this path. This has to become election campaign issues, which is the whole point of what we're doing. If you understand the digital currency petition, we also need a petition to actually go after these facial recognition camera systems, the surveillance state. We actually have to have petitions going after every little facet of the surveillance state. So facial recognition cameras, or I should say public monitoring and the collecting of who's out there. They have no right. This is an absolute violation of our Fourth Amendment rights. And as a matter of fact, even traffic cameras are a direct violation of the Constitution. You have a right to face your accuser. A camera cannot be your accuser. They cannot create a system that says we can use technology to basically cite you, which actually goes down to this whole concept of, you know, we've even accepted traffic court. Traffic court is not a common law court. And the Constitution clearly says in the Seventh Amendment that any matter over $20, any matter over $20, the right to a trial by jury shall be preserved. And the person has a right to having a ticket. If it's over $20, you have a right to actually demand a trial by jury. And they're not giving it to you, and they won't. But you have a right to petition them. And so the whole concept of energy controls and climatology, all of these things are a part of the surveillance state. This is why they want to move everything into things that they have full control. The last thing they want you to do and understand is how to run your car off of water, because that crap falls from the sky. It's everywhere. They can't get rid of it. So they want to make sure that they take it from you, because they know, one, it's life essential, and it offers so much potential. So energy and climatology, these are integral as the religion of the surveillance state. When we look at, you know, these other little things of big tech and how big tech is spying on us, you know, whether it be geofencing, and I don't know how many people understand this concept of geofencing, but there is this thing, sorry about the ring, there is this thing called geofencing. You need to look it up. Geofencing is a way that big tech spies on you. They keep track of where you are and what you're doing, and so they can bombard you with local advertisement. So if you travel from your current location to some vacation or you're on travel, they can use geofencing to target you for very, you may be in the need of a hotel. You may be in the need of a restaurant. And that's how they're using this. But underneath all of that, this is government tracking you on everything you're doing. And they're not only tracking that information. Because, see, when you really look at geofencing, they're also collecting on any type of digital RFIDs, such as your credit cards, such as any type of identification cards that you have with RFID. They're able to garner. And as a matter of fact, when you drive by, they can pick this stuff up. Not only that, they can pick up the onboard diagnostics of your vehicle. What vehicle are you in? The technology and the amount of the information that they can obtain via the surveillance state is mind-boggling, especially those of you who travel with your phones on. And you have surrendered all of your... How many patriots? I mean, I don't know very many patriots that actually don't have a zero digital footprint, you know, on their phone. Just everybody I know has apps and they've got these accounts with Google and so forth or Amazon that allows them access to pull in free apps. Folks, have you ever heard the story? There's no such thing as a free lunch. I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a free app. You're getting something that is spying on you. And states need to actually start passing laws that say all of the surveillance cannot be done. And they're going to do it anyway, but the states actually need to start going after these. And this is why we need petitions. We need petitions to go after these things, to get our state government to actually start standing up against all of these things. So understanding geofencing, that's just shining a little bit of light on a bigger problem. Another part of the big problem of America is the selling out of America and allowing this whole concept, because there's many states. Georgia, we had found, has actually implemented a process and a system that allows Georgia to create inner banking relationships with the MLS system, the multi-listing, you know, properties, the real estate properties, and connect to foreign banks and allow foreign banks to actually make transactions in purchasing of America. Whether you know it or not, they're selling this place out from underneath our feet, and they have no constitutional standing to do so. And I'm here to tell you that all of the sales, all of these transactions are illegitimate, but we cannot take them back unless we take back our government before it actually falls. And if it does fall, we need the states to secede, or we need the states to actually stand up and say, hey, we're not allowing you to do this. You can't set aside our Constitution. You don't have that authority. That's our compact. And this is when the states absolutely have to step in. It is the last... You know, it is the last play of the game when they actually say we have to set aside the Constitution and we have to go into this new, better government that's going to ensure equity for all. And whatever other buzzwords that everybody, that warms the cockles of my soul. Folks, I cannot tell you, and I have told you this time and time again, the big tech, even though it's spying, it is directly sharing all of this information with government. Big tech is working hand in hand with China, and they've been working hand in hand with America from the beginning. Amazon before China even opened up to big tech and what we could do. I'm telling you that we've actually made this beast. America is behind the driving of this beast, and they're actually doing this to the world. And they're now in a position where they've actually are seizing control around the world. And they're getting ready to do it here. Look at the map, folks. The battle map is clear. We have to start using petitions to take back our counties and our states, and eventually our states, but we need to make sure that other counties are getting involved. We have to start sounding the alarm. You know, we read these things in the Federalist Papers. We read these things in the ratification debates. More importantly, in the ratification debates, they talk about the importance of interposition. Those types of things are not in the Federalist Papers. Nor, if they were, the Federalist Papers don't mean anything because they're not legally binding. So we have to really start getting down to business, and we have to really start holding our public servants. When we talk about our government, we're not talking about these buildings with lights in them and these fixtures and furniture. That's property of the government. The government are the people that we elect that are basically doing things to us that are direct violations of their oath of office. And that's why we're doing these petitions. We're holding them accountable and using the Constitution as our weapon the way God designed. And I'm telling you that nobody understood why those things are there. And this is probably why, and I'm hoping to actually have, what is the gentleman's name? Because I actually communicated with him last week. And I believe it's Todd. Yeah, Todd Callender, who's discovered and has evidence how many of those in the federal services have not taken their oath of office. In other words, they should not be able, they've violated their ability to be able to serve, because as they are acting supposedly as an elected and sworn in officer and not being sworn in, they are defrauding the people. Everything that has been done over the course of over a century has been defrauding the people by creating government that is not within their powers. It is all fraud. The best way to describe this is that they have created a house of cards. As they created the Organic Act, as they started creating these government corporations, which are all violations of the Constitution, as they created a government banking system, which is all a violation under the Constitution, especially the Federal Reserve. Especially all of these things that they've implemented. And folks, they've been stealing from us. They've been moving this money to the globalists, those who are out to destroy us. America has been funding its own destruction, as well as the capturing of the world. And the world has been using their money because, see, these other global countries in the world, these other countries in the world, and the global governance of the United Nations, these other nations have the legitimate ability to join that because they do not have enumerated constitutions. They do not have what we have. They can actually enter into treaties and actually form and become a part of a global government. They have joined the United Nations as a union. We, the United States, cannot adjoin to any treaty or any polity. It is unconstitutional. That power has never been granted. Read our petition number 2. This is very, very clear. So, folks, as we look at this fraud, as we look at this facade of government, this house of cards, we're holding all of the power. I mean, we're holding the fan and the flame to basically blow down and burn their house of cards. Why is this not exciting? Why is this something that people aren't just going, wow, this is great? It's just about waking the people up. So what I have to do, and I'm going to share this with you because I've been sharing this with my leadership team, or I should say the leadership team that I am a servant to, because I am here to help and I'm not from the government, right? You hear me say that all the time. And so my focus is to finish this medical freedom petition. I'm in the final throes of it. I did a lot of work on it this weekend. I had to do more cogitating and prayer as, you know, a part of my fasting and so forth, just to kind of what I needed to do to put this and bring it all together. Because it's not about grinding an axe against Bill Gates. It's not about grinding an axe against the federal government. It is about how they have been operating outside the law and directly violating the law. And how and what needs to happen. As a matter of fact, you know, technically Bill Gates and all of these billionaires in America that are funding Warren Buffett, all of these people that have been funding these, you know, foundations that are supporting globalism, they're committing treason. And we, the people, even Trump is doing this. Is Trump willing to stop this funding of globalism? Because he's the first one to admit he's been buying the swamp. We all know it's about doing the right thing now and moving forward. I am here to tell you, I started the show off on, you know, how America wants vengeance. They demand vengeance. As a matter of fact, if we actually seek justice and not trying to destroy people, but justice, we first have to take back our government. That has to be our focus. And so we actually, when we look at what we can do, I honestly believe that, you know, people have been operating under this this bad information, this indoctrination, and everybody's been blinded. There's none among us that understood what was going on until now. And so I believe that everybody must have, you know, some blanketed, you know, I call it the first and final. Trump gets a first and final. Everybody gets a first and final, except for those people who have been gainfully working, because I'm telling you, those who have been working with China in the past few years and they've been committing these crimes of treason, they're all going to have to suffer the justice that must be delivered upon them. And I think that the world, when the world is going to say, yeah, you know, I don't care if we have to face the Third World War here in America, at least we will be able to win and we will be able to withstand what the world can throw against us because we have him on our side. There's no doubt in my mind we will prevail. There's no doubt in my mind that he has given us everything we need to actually prevail against this world who is trying to destroy us. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.